the circular economy really shines through. I was able to buy 4 dozen eggs, 2 pounds of ground beef, 2 quarts of yogurt, a loaf of sourdough bread, a month's supply of collagen powder, and 4 pounds of coffee. So I was able to go to that meetup and like actually do a grocery trip. I make maple syrup, I produce eggs, I produce lamb meat. I also make these custom Bitcoin mining space heaters.
That's why it's good to go to these things, because you can participate in that circular economy.
Best way to get the Bitcoin, you want to go essentially where the Bitcoiners are. Homesteading is basically taking the place that you live and using that to produce yields for you. How can I take the sun that's shining on my property and turn that into some Bitcoin?
The whole idea of permaculture is fascinating.
Come to Michigan and experience the meetup culture that we have here.
Welcome back to the Bitcoin Nova. I have Rev Hoddle with me here today, and he is somebody that I met at a local Bitcoin meetup, and I'm so excited for, you know, what he's doing and to introduce him to all of you guys so he can tell you about the circular economy that he's building and how he's using Bitcoin as payment, and it's part of culture. You know, it's Bitcoin culture. It's that's what it's all about. That's, you know, using Bitcoin, paying for things peer-to-peer, for services and goods. And it's really exciting to hear how he's doing it. So thank you for joining me, Rev Hoddle.
Hey, yeah, I've been, it was cool to meet you at the meetup, and I've listened to the episodes that you've released to the podcast since I learned about it, and I've been enjoying listening, and now it's cool to be here talking too.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thanks for, it's cool when you know about somebody doing podcasts and you actually go and hear the episodes, then you can kind of see what you're in for and see what the episodes are going, or how they're going. But it's really nice to have you on, and thank you for wanting to do this with me. We met at a Bitcoin meetup near us. You know, you travel a bit further to get there than I do. It's a little more local to me, but I am so excited that even when you hear about a meetup that's in the near vicinity, you could drive in. And I know I found it from Club Orange, so I'm a big fan of that app because I've met people like you, and it's fascinating talking, you know, to you and figuring out what you're into in Bitcoin and what you're doing. So especially the what was crazy was that you had a miner there in the place. Like, we were at this place called Bottle Theory. That's where we meet up for the Bitcoin meetups. And you brought up a miner that you convert into space heaters. So it was amazing because I stood right next to it and it was so warm and so quiet. So normally I'm sitting here doing my podcast with my own space heater and it's loud. You know, this thing was so quiet. So you've converted it and I was amazed. So I'm definitely getting one. And I wish I had it here now to show people, but we're meeting up pretty soon and I'm going to pick it up in person. So I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, I like to never show up to a meetup empty-handed. I think mm-hmm. that the meetups are where the circular economies begin. Mm-hmm. I've been homesteading. I'm not exactly close to any of the meetups that I go to. I tend to travel anywhere from an hour and a half, 2 hours to these meetups. But I've got a good incentive because I've been doing this homesteading thing out here in Southwest Michigan for about 10 years. And, you know, I make maple syrup, I produce eggs, I produce lamb meat. And I also make these custom Bitcoin mining space heaters. And so since it's wintertime and my chickens aren't laying so much and I'm sold out of maple syrup and I'm just about to start making more, the only thing I typically have to show up with over the wintertime is these space heaters. So I brought one into Bottle Theory and plugged it in. It's always so cool when people can see it in person. Mm-hmm. It's one thing to, you know, see a website or watch a video about it, but when you can actually feel the heat coming out of it, really see for yourself how loud it is. Now, in the bar, it's not exactly the best example of how quiet it really is, but you just get a good sense of this thing is real. And another thing, when it comes to Bitcoin miners, buying these miners and acquiring these miners, a lot of times you're paying in Bitcoin for them. And this is a big way that people are getting scammed. If you're on Telegram and you see somebody trying to sell you Bitcoin mining equipment, I would be very skeptical that that's a real deal. And you can try and find them on eBay and stuff like this, but a lot of times that's broken gear, really bad, poor quality stuff. So anyways, when I show up with the miner in person, you get to see that it works, you know, you get to touch it, feel it, and know that it's a real thing.
Right. And you're meeting the person you're transacting with peer-to-peer. It's a really great experience just being able to send Bitcoin to somebody and get the miner. You know, you can. So after I saw the one that you had there, somebody at the meetup was already purchasing that one. So we ended up contacting each other, and that's why you're bringing me mine at this next meetup. So, you know, I'm really excited that you're making the drive. You know, you do it often, and it's really nice that you enjoy, you know, building that circular economy, bringing your work over there so people can benefit from it, you know, actually use something that, you know, they're already using, but being able to earn Bitcoin and support the Bitcoin network and get heat in a better way. I mean, in a quieter way. I'm just fascinated. So it's really great that you're making your way around. You know, you're going to, you know, making the drive and going to different ones. And for people who are, you know, because you are not here today with your face showing, you're anonymous, you don't want to show yourself online, but you go to these meetups. There's so many people that I've met, you know, on X and in our community who, you know, they love the idea of connecting with other Bitcoiners. And some of them have joined me in my Orange Pill, Club Orange, I keep calling it Orange Pill, but my Club Orange Bitcoin Army group chat. And I'm really excited that they're there, but some of them are still hesitant about meeting up in person. What would you say to those people?
Well, I think that, you know, there's, it all depends on what you're Bitcoining for, you know, mm-hmm. what's the whole purpose of the reason why you're stacking and participating. Mm-hmm. And for me, you know, Bitcoin was kind of like the missing piece of this homesteading prepping journey that I've been on for the last 10 years. I was trying to become, before I knew about Bitcoin, become as sovereign as possible, mm-hmm. trying to generate my own food and generate my own power and have really overlapping access to clean water and, you know, just trying to take responsibility for all of these things in my life. And the money was something where I couldn't see a way. Before I knew about Bitcoin, I was like, there's no real way for me to I'm not going to switch to trying to transact with people in silver and gold coins. You know, that's ridiculous. And so I basically resorted to trying to a mindset of trying to use or need money as little as possible. So therefore I wouldn't have to rely on it so much. Mm-hmm. And once I found Bitcoin, the whole script flipped on its head, where I was like, oh my goodness, this is something that is going to, empower people to now. It's basically supercharged everything that I'm doing here in the homestead, because now I can actually save in a money that I know is mine and it can't be taken from me and it can't be debased. It's true. And so with that comes the purchasing power. And so now I'm trying to focus on using the fiat money less, as little as possible. And instead of, there's just this void of like barter in between, now I get to try and integrate Bitcoin into my lifestyle as much as possible. And so where the meetups come in is that this is where people who want to use their Bitcoin as money can find market access to the daily goods and services that they might need. This is why food is a great example of something to start and bootstrap a Bitcoin circular economy with, because every month I'm coming to the meetup and every month everybody needs more food. You eat it and then you replace it, right? And if a lot of people are starting to produce food products, then, you know, you basically are just trading the food with each other, but using Bitcoin as the medium of exchange. And so that's why I am comfortable going to these meetups in person, because it benefits me. It basically gives me so much more utility for my Bitcoin. If I'm just hodling the Bitcoin and trying to, you know, access this purchasing power, and when shit hits the fan, I'm going to try and spend my way out of it. Well, guess what? I think I'm going to have to spend a lot more Bitcoin in those situations than if I already have a network of people built up and we're already doing these economic trades. We've already got the economy built.
Mm-hmm. So do you feel like compared to, you know, fiat, like how do you price things? Like, is it hard to price things in Bitcoin when you know that as a Bitcoiner, do you know how to price things in Bitcoin? Is it hard to decide? Because for me as a hairdresser providing a service to Bitcoiners, I would love to, you know, offer services in Bitcoin, but do you give them, I mean, it's almost like because you know where this thing is going, do you charge much less? Do you charge the same as you would in dollar trading terms? Like, how does that work for you?
Well, a lot of people suggest, you know, to create an incentive for people to spend their Bitcoin, you give a discount if you pay in Bitcoin. And that's one way of looking at it. But the way I like to describe it is I actually charge a premium for fiat. So I actually have a couple short-term rentals at my homestead here. I built a tiny house, a 20-foot tiny house and a 10-foot yurt. And I rent those on a nightly basis for people to come access the tourist things that you can do here, the sandy beaches and the wineries and the ecotourism and everything. And so while they're here, I surely shill my maple syrup and whatever homestead goods I have. But those guests, when they're paying in fiat, are paying, you know, $2-3 more for the same item. And I just price what I actually get what I want when I price it in sats at the meetup. Okay. And I actually don't price in sats at the meetup. I actually still denominate everything in dollars. I think this is just kind of a good marketing strategy because people understand dollar pricing. You know, people... While the dollar is inflating and prices are continuously going up, the volatility of the Bitcoin price just isn't conducive to pricing everyday goods in Bitcoin just yet. Now, on the other hand, you know, if there's an event that I'm going to, like this Lake Satoshi retreat here in outside of Lansing, Michigan, they have that it's the first week of August every year. I think it's August 2nd this year. So that's a weekend event. And when I bring my stuff to sell there, I know that I'm here with my stuff, and maybe the price of Bitcoin can move a few percent over the course of the weekend or whatever, but I just tack on an exact sat amount, 20K sats, 10K sats for this or that. And so depending on the situation, I'm either denominating my prices in dollars or sats.
Yeah, that's a really great way to do it. I think it's true because people aren't used to, it's hard to wrap your head around, you know, the sat price. So it's just something we're already used to use dollars. And I love that. I love to just, you know, if you're using fiat, you just pay a premium. That's perfect. I think that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to adopt that strategy. So yeah, I think that it's really great that you are, you know, bringing these things to that meetup that you're talking about. What is it called again? The one in August?
Lake Satoshi.
Yeah. So you're located, you go to local meetups in your area, which are located in Michigan. So even if I wanted to join those, that would be great because I'm located in the Chicago area. So traveling isn't that bad for me, you know, so I could make it to the Michigan meetups and we're just kind of this little Midwest Bitcoin family. So yeah, it's really exciting. And you do the maple syrup thing. That's one thing I'm super excited about, too, because we were talking last night. We were actually at an event for a Bitcoin co-working space that's opening up in Chicago. And I'm really, really excited about that. It feels like we have this, you know, home for Bitcoiners in the Midwest. And it's going to be a restaurant, but it's going to be a place for, you know, marketplace type things where you could bring your stuff there and sell things and just for education and learning and, you know, but it's a restaurant, you know, so it's a cool place for us to hang out and get together, host events. But there was a pre-event last night that we were both at and you were telling me about your maple syrup. And I learned so much just from talking to you for a short time about how you do it. And I was fascinated because you told me that you pretty much use Bitcoin mining heat for the maple syrup making process. And that was amazing because not only would I be buying maple syrup in Bitcoin from you, but knowing that it was Bitcoin mining heat that helped produce that was amazing. Like, I'm so excited. I'm even more excited to get it because of that. So can you kind of tell people how you do it with the heat?
So in addition to this homesteading stuff, I also practice a methodology or a design framework called permaculture. And so permaculture's three ethics: earth care, people care, and the third ethic I call non-extraction. Mm-hmm. And then there's 12 principles that go along with that. And one of the principles that I really love to play around with is this integrate rather than segregate principle. And so when I'm trying to produce my products, I'm trying to figure out when I'm spending my time, can I be taking, can I be doing more than one thing at once? And so Bitcoin mining is very conducive to integrating that into systems, especially if you need heat in those systems. And so I not only do I make the maple syrup with Bitcoin miners, but I also dry all my laundry with Bitcoin miners. I've converted my clothes dryer to mine Bitcoin. I converted my hot water heater to mine Bitcoin. I heat my house with Bitcoin miners. I have space heaters. I have a Bitcoin miner in like every room. I grow my cannabis starts with Bitcoin miners heating my little greenhouse. I use Bitcoin miners for heat any way I can. One of the main reasons is like I really don't like participating in the KYC acquisition of Bitcoin. I pretty much avoid it at all costs. I wouldn't say I passed the purity test 100%. There are some times when people will pay me for a good or service in Cash App, and I will take the fiat from them and immediately buy Bitcoin and withdraw it over Lightning, right? But $20 here or there. Anyways, so I'm integrating this Bitcoin mining heat reuse in any way I can. And with the maple syrup, the way that I do it is I actually, the reason what I need the heat for is actually to preheat the sap that comes from the trees before I run it through this filter. It's a reverse osmosis filter. And so I'm mechanically removing the water from the sap to pre-concentrate it before I start boiling the sap down to finish it into syrup. And when you collect this sap, right now it's maple sugaring season here in Michigan. I'm tapping trees right now and I'm just starting to collect the sap. And so it's still cold. It's wintertime. And so that sap is really cold and the filter doesn't work so well when that sap is cold. And so I actually ran into a problem where every year I've been scaling up my operation from 60 taps to 120 taps. This year I'm at 200 taps. And I'm trying to squeeze all of this sap through this bottleneck of the filter and this little kettle that I'm boiling out of. And so one year I realized like, okay, I've scaled up too much. I have a back, like this sap is piling up. I cannot push it through this filter fast enough. And I need a way to speed up this process. Otherwise, I need to upgrade all of my equipment and scale up. And so I'd been playing around with this idea of using canola oil as a dielectric fluid for immersion Bitcoin mining. Typically, when you have a miner and you're doing this immersion mining process, you need to buy these expensive and very specific dielectric fluids so that it doesn't short the miner and it has longevity and it's biodegradable and yada, yada, yada. But I had been joking around in some of these mining chats, these group chats that I'm in, that canola oil is being studied as a dielectric fluid for like transformers and stuff. It came up. And so I was like, well, there's no reason why we couldn't use canola oil to put a Bitcoin miner into it. And it was kind of against the status quo. And there are some difficulties with using it. But ultimately, I'm using this canola oil. I'm putting the miner in this tank of canola oil. I heat the canola oil up. And then I exchange the heat from that canola oil into the sap via a plate heat exchanger. And so now I'm able to preheat the sap just before it goes into the filter. And that drastically increases the efficiency or the throughput of the filter, allowing me to scale up my operation just by adding the Bitcoin mining heat into it without having to buy any new stuff.
So you heat up the canola oil with the Bitcoin mining heat.
Right. The actual computer, the hashboard, is submerged in the canola oil.
So that's what I was going to ask. So dielectric fluid is what that immersion cooling fluid is, right? So instead of having to buy this certain fluid, you could use canola oil.
Exactly. And this, you know, my hot water heater works the same way. And I've kind of found, so with the maple sugaring season, I only need to use this canola oil. It only needs to remain effective for a month or so. That's about how long, maybe 6 weeks if I'm really having a good long season. But so the canola oil only needs to hold up its properties for that period of time, which is fairly short. Now I started to try and use it with my hot water heater, which is more of a perpetual use case, right? I'm just always going to be using this oil to heat my water. And I found that with poor management, it lasts about 8 months. before mm-hmm. the oil degrades to the point where it no longer is effective. And so the thing is that this canola oil is readily accessible. Like sometimes I need a top off, I spill some oil or whatever. I can go to the gas station and get a quart of canola oil in a pinch.
Yeah.
You can't really do that with all these specialized dielectric fluids. And if I'm careful about it, I can go to Costco and get the canola oil when it's on sale, gallons at a time, for pennies compared to dollars per gallon that this more specific fluid costs. So it opens up immersion, like people being able to tinker around with immersion Bitcoin mining at a low overhead upfront investment and learn if that their system is going to work, if they like the way that it's working, and try and make some new discoveries without having to spend all this money and do all this. I don't even know where you get this stuff, right? Like, especially if you only need 5 gallons of it. Typically, right. You're buying these big, huge vats of it and everything. So
how did you come to this conclusion? How did you figure that out, that you could use oil? Is it because, did you ever try the other immersion cooling, immersion cooling fluid, I guess. But did you try it and see the consistency was oily? And then you just thought, let me.
Well, I think it was, you know, this was right around when, I don't know if you're in these group chats and somebody asks a question and then somebody in the group chat will like plug that question into the AI and then just copy and paste whatever the huge long bullshit thing that the slop that the AI puts out. Mm-hmm. Well, this was fairly early on when that was starting to happen. It wasn't necessarily, it was kind of actually cool at the time, right? It wasn't mm-hmm. annoying yet. It was like, oh, wow, you're using the artificial intelligence to see what's out, to see if there's any new undiscovered information. And it came up in one of these dumps that this canola oil was being used as a dielectric fluid. Mm-hmm. And everyone kind of dismissed it. But I was in this pinch where I had the sap sitting there piled up. And if I didn't do anything immediately, that was all going to spoil and my work was all going to be lost and I was going to make no money from mm-hmm. collecting all of that sap. And so I was kind of like, well, I got to try something. And I've been thinking about using this canola oil and I know I can go get it right down the road. Why not give it a shot? Mm-hmm. And I didn't use my finest, most efficient Bitcoin mining equipment to do this experiment, right? I used a hash board from an S9, you know, it's a very old piece of equipment, low value, right? And I just wanted to see if it worked in general. And right. I made it through that season using that S9. And now I've upgraded. Now I'm confident that I'm not going to break my equipment using this canola oil. So I use my most efficient stuff. But yeah, it just kind of was, it was just, I don't know. No one had a good reason to try it mm-hmm. until I was forced to. And then here it is. And I actually don't know if anyone's tried it other than me. I haven't heard of anyone else really playing around with the canola oil yet.
That's so amazing. Like, imagine if all these immersion cooling warehouses, like, you know, start hearing about this. And it's like, I mean, honestly, like, that's so cool that AI, even though it gets annoying now and everyone's using it for everything, it's, you got something valuable out of it and something that nobody else has done yet. So, and it helped you in your, you know, the problem that you were having. So yeah, this is just, I'm excited about what you're doing with it, how you solved this problem, and how you are making such pure maple syrup using the Bitcoin heat. And, you know, I think somebody said that your maple syrup is so much better tasting than, you know, any other one they've tasted. So I'm really excited to get some. So, and I know you're in the process of doing the, what do you call it again? What are you picking the trees? How do you
tapping,
call it?
Tapping.
Yep. Picking.
You drill a hole in the tree. You yes. pound a little metal spile into there, a little metal tube, and then you attach your tubing to it mm-hmm. and collect that sap.
So
basically,
long...
one tap produces about a quart of syrup if you're doing a good job.
Okay. And how long do you think that will take? Like, when does the process actually start to convert it to maple syrup?
Well, this is the trick with maple sugaring, is that you're subject to the volatility of nature. And so the trees, the sugar maple trees, they start to push their sap from the roots up to the tops of the trees when the weather switches from being frozen all day and all night to being above freezing during the day and then going back to freezing at night. And so the tree pushes the sap up to the top to wake up the buds and energize the system. And then as it gets cold and frozen, the sap goes back down into the roots. And so the sap flow happens in these very specific weather conditions. And so like right now, just last week, the sap was flowing and I was not ready and I was frantically tapping all the trees. And now the weather's gone back to being 20 degrees outside and the sap is not flowing and all the sap that's in the buckets that I've collected so far is frozen and it's going to be waiting for me. But so you never really know when it's going to start, when the flow is going to start, totally dependent on the weather, if it's going to stop, if it goes, also if the weather gets to the point where, you know, it's 40 degrees at night and 60 during the day, now the sap also is stopped flowing and you're risking spoiling it, right? You got to get all of the sap out of those buckets because it's too hot and bacteria in there will start to ferment it and spoil it. So it can last anywhere, like I said, from 1 month. It's typically about 4 weeks here in Michigan. A good season, you could get 6 weeks of this intermittent flow of the sap coming. But
so
like
what
I said,
happens?
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Sorry. If it gets warm like that and you risk it spoiling, do you start the process then with the sap you've collected already?
So if it gets too warm, you basically process everything and then you wait. You basically turn your buckets over and you wait until it gets back into those cooler weather conditions. Because if you get nasty sap in your buckets and everything, now this is going to spoil future. It's like food safety at a massive scale, you know. It's a little bit forgiving, but it's basically that. You have to be very, the cleaner you are and the more attentive and intensive in your management, the better your syrup is going to be. The less funky flavors you'll get in there or whatever.
So, I mean, I'm not a typical smoker, but watching you light up a cigarette makes me want to have one with you. But I like socially smoke. But do you have cigarettes that you roll because you're not, you know, using typical cigarettes that you buy just at a gas station or something? Or what kind of, like, how far outside of the system are you from buying regular stuff at the store or making your own?
Well, you know, I actually hadn't used tobacco in a long time. And I recently picked it up again. This is just like more personal, for personal reasons, right? I found myself desiring the comfort of a nice tobacco nicotine buzz. And so that leads to buying cigarettes again at the store, and the cigarettes are expensive. And I do a lot of wild foraging at the homestead. So I forage for, this plant called mullein, and that's typically what I was smoking. I grow cannabis here at the homestead too. And that's an interesting story in itself, how I actually produce the cannabis, but I like to, instead of just rolling joints, I like to mix mullein in with my joints, and sometimes I'll just roll like a raspberry leaf mullein cigarette and smoke that just to smoke something. Needless to say, I was thinning it every, when I buy these packs of cigarettes, I basically break the cigarette open and then re-roll it into different formats of different kinds of smokes depending on how I'm feeling.
Wow.
And it's expensive, right? And you don't want to. Granted, I am able to buy my cigarettes with Bitcoin because I orange pilled the guy at the corner store. And so, and that took me a couple of years to get this guy on board with accepting my Bitcoin. And I'm pretty much the only person who goes in there and pays in Bitcoin. And that actually works out and makes it sustainable for him. If everybody was trying to pay in Bitcoin, the system that he's got set up for receiving it wouldn't work. Needless to say, you know, it's expensive to buy packs of cigarettes. So you can buy tobacco in bulk online and then re-roll it into however you like.
So what's that plant that you like, how did you, I mean, I've never heard of somebody using that, so how did, like, do you just try it out and see, or what kind of benefits does that plant have or anything?
Well, so this is actually another funny story. So this is also related to Bitcoin mining, home mining. So how I really got started with home mining was a friend of mine basically gave me an S9 and helped me set it up so I could mine Bitcoin with the extra solar power that I was producing at my yurt. My yurt is off grid, so it's run on this small solar power system. And when I don't have guests in there, my batteries are charged up and I'm essentially throwing away free power. And what better thing to do with free power than to mine Bitcoin, right? So I was mining Bitcoin with this S9 at my yurt. And once the sun goes away in the, you know, in the wintertime, it didn't make sense to have that thing plugged in anymore. And so now I've got this miner sitting there, but it's not doing any hashing. And I started to think, well, what could I do with it to keep hashing for it to make sense? Because if anyone knows it, an S9, basically, you have to have an electricity cost of like less than 1 cent to be profitable with that thing. So if you're plugging it in and not doing anything with the heat, you're basically buying Bitcoin at an insane premium to spot. And so I thought to myself, well, a food dehydrator is basically just, you just need something to blow hot air into a box. And a Bitcoin miner can easily blow hot air into a box. So I measured the Excalibur, you know, consumer grade food dehydrator, and just built a box that matched all those specifications, and cut a hole in the back and pushed this S9 up against it. And now I'm dehydrating all this stuff. Well, once I started using this thing as a dehydrator, I was like, well, now I'm only, you know, I get strawberries and I get raspberries and I get this and I get that. But I wanted that thing to be hashing all the time. And so it created this incentive for me to like go and discover look at every weed and every single thing that was growing in my backyard, and looking at it and say, does this have any potential use? Because I knew like dandelion root, for example, would be, it's like a really cool thing to add into these ciders and everything that I make. But if I don't have a food dehydrator, I have to basically harvest the dandelion root and then use it in the cider before it spoils. But right. If I have a food dehydrator, now I can harvest the dandelion root, put it in a jar, and it's waiting for me for when I'm ready to make the cider.
Like,
so I realized, anything like that, right? So I realized I can go and find all of this, find the medicinal value, the usefulness of every single plant that I can find growing at the homestead, dehydrate it, just keep that dehydrator processing something at all times, and then preserve that and use it for a later time. And this mullein plant, I learned, this was actually around the time of COVID. And so, you know, COVID was, you could have this bad cough or whatever, right? Could affect your lungs. And this mullein plant was supposed to actually be very good if you smoked it for helping to clear out infections in the lung. You know, it was beneficial to the lungs. And this was right around the time when I was interested in quitting smoking tobacco in the first place. So I was like, well, cool. I can just use this mullein plant as a tobacco replacement. I'll go harvest a bunch and then put it into my Bitcoin mining food dehydrator. And now I'm stacking sats, KYC free, DCA, you know, you DCA into these KYC free sats, you produce a medicinal product, and then I get to use it.
And how does it taste too? Is it like a weird taste?
It's a very tobacco like flavor. Really good tobacco substitute. It really scratches the itch. You obviously don't get the nicotine buzz, which eventually that's what I wanted. But you know, the flavor and the experience of it is very similar.
Yeah. I just wonder, it's like, I think sometimes thinking about how bad certain things are for your health now is just because there's so much, you know, corporations pumping toxins into them. But, you know, when I think about, you know, my family, they're, you know, my ancestors are from Greece, and everybody smokes cigarettes. Like, everybody and their mother is a cigarette smoker out there. There's ashtrays everywhere. But, you know, I had, you know, my dad was a lifelong smoker, and he's, you know, finally just now quit, but he smoked all his life and he's okay. But like, his father smoked and he lived till he was like 98, you know? So it's like, I think that tobacco, same with that other plant that you found, maybe nicotine isn't necessarily bad for you. It's just all the poison that is added to the things that we do that makes it so terrible. So it's just really cool that you found other use cases, and you found it through Bitcoin mining as well. That is a really interesting story. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, the whole like meme, Bitcoin fixes this, you know, maybe that's ringing true in my life, right? Because I'm looking at everything through the lens of Bitcoin, and then Bitcoin mining, I'm finding these incentives to then find better solutions for problems in my life.
That's crazy. Yeah,
to your point of like I think maybe the issue with tobacco, like you said, and food and these things that we consume on a regular basis in general, is the fact that it's all pushed through this centralized regulation system, and then overprocessed and overpreserved and made to, it's delocalized, like it's not local anymore, right? I don't know anyone who's growing tobacco that I could just go get a little bit of tobacco from, you know?
Right.
It's actually harder to find homegrown tobacco than it is to find homegrown cannabis, believe it or not, which is crazy.
Well, I want to hear about your homegrown cannabis story too, but I also think if you can dehydrate those plants, then you probably could grow some tobacco and bring some homegrown tobacco, mulberry or whatever it's called, mulberry, I think, you know, cigarettes to people for when you come to the meetups. You could also do, you know, there's so many things people would be interested in trying. It's so funny.
Yeah, sell the no KYC Lucy's at the meetup.
What are those?
You like one single cigarettes or something, right?
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah.
I would call them herbal smokes. Mm-hmm. Anyways, it's very strange because the regulations around tobacco and alcohol are actually, you know, more dangerous, I'd say, because it's more established than the cannabis to be messing around like that. Like, if you wanted to start a small tobacco farm in your backyard and make these cigarettes and sell them on the black, you know, sell them at meetups or whatever, that's actually probably more federally illegal than it would be to be selling single joints or something like that, which is, it's wow. Just nonsense.
That's because they're already making so much money off of tobacco. So they're like, you can't be doing this because we want to cut. That's why,
yeah.
I mean,
I'm not a lawyer. I don't really fucking know, but you know, yeah. It's just there. If you look into like what you have to do, what you have to comply with, in order to like grow and sell tobacco or produce alcohol, it's a huge amount of shit that you have to do. You just are not basically allowed to do it without jumping through a bunch of hoops and working your way through all kinds of red tape.
Which is crazy because, you know, when you kind of almost mentioned the word black market, they make it like that word is like, oh, you're doing underground illegal things. But it's like illegal things to who? To somebody who's saying that you shouldn't do these things? Because if you're not starting some mass online business and going, you know, scaling it up and doing all this stuff where you're shipping it everywhere, it's like if you're just person to person doing it for your community and people around you, it's like, who's to say what's illegal? So it's just kind of funny how the government wants their hands and everything sort of thing. But how did you get your, how did you start the cannabis stuff then?
Well, so one of the reasons why I chose to live where I live here in mm-hmm. Southwest Michigan is the cannabis laws in Michigan had not been passed yet when I bought the homestead, mm-hmm. but I did find, a township with ordinances and zoning that was very friendly to cannabis, should it be passed. Mm-hmm. And I saw this as, because when I lived in Los Angeles for a while, and when I was living there, I was growing cannabis, like in the backyard, in my closet, mm-hmm. experimenting with hydroponic stuff and whatever. And so when I came to Michigan, I was like, well, I want to try and grow this stuff outside the way it's supposed to be, you know, like really grow some nice big plants. And if the law changes, then I'll be able to do this. And I want to go to a place that isn't going to be saying, oh, no, the cannabis is actually still bad, even though the state changed the law. And so this area was very friendly towards that. So I chose to live in the area mainly because of it. And I started to figure out, you know, just read the rules and figure out what the regulations were if I wanted to actually produce this and turn it into a business. Now, once again, much like the tobacco and the alcohol, there's no being a small scale person. You have to basically make that your entire business model is growing this cannabis in order to comply with all the rules and the regulations. You can't essentially do anything else. That has to be your whole business. But the recreational laws allowed you to grow 12 plants with a few caveats. And so I started growing these 12 plants that I was allowed for myself. And I was having to do some work, you know, to manage this garden. You know, there's weeding to be done, fertilization, watering, and so on and so forth. And at the same time, I started to get into meat rabbits because rabbits are actually one of the easiest ways, like the lowest input protein source that you can do in a small footprint. Even in the suburbs, it'd be very easy to basically go and prune a bunch of your bushes and trees and whatever, the weeds from your garden, feed it to rabbits and turn that into meat. You could have a few cages on the backside of your garage or whatever.
So what's the meat rabbit versus a regular rabbit? Is it just, you just feed them more?
Well, you could have a pet rabbit, right? And the pet bunnies don't necessarily, their genetics are not meant to like convert the food that you feed them into size and meat. These meat rabbits are, when you feed them, they convert that into meat and they get big fast. Mm. And so I was starting to mess around with these meat rabbits, and that was some work, right? I was doing work to manage my cannabis garden, and I was doing work to manage these rabbits in cages that I had. And I started to think about it. Well, the rules in Michigan say that I have to have a fence around the garden. So that means I've already got this fenced in location. If I just, reinforce this fence to make sure that these rabbits won't get out of it, now I can just introduce the rabbits into the cannabis garden and they can do the work of weeding the cannabis. And actually, rabbits produce a manure, which is kind of special. It's unique versus any of the other animals at the homestead. I've got sheep here. I've got horses here. I've got chickens, ducks, geese, all kinds of other animals. Their manure requires composting or aging before you can actually use it as fertilizer for a plant because there's too much nitrogen content in there. The rabbit manure is special in that you can actually use rabbit manure as soon as it comes out of the rabbit directly on the plant as fertilizer. So now I'm passively fertilizing and weeding my cannabis. And the cannabis is to a non-insignificant degree feeding the rabbits, turning that, they're able to eat the cannabis to a degree because I exclude the main stalk of the cannabis with a cage. So the rabbits can't actually eat the whole plant down, but the branches grow through this cage. And so they're able to eat all of the branches that grow through about 3 feet as high as they can reach. And then I get the rest at the top. So they're weeding and fertilizing my cannabis. And then I'm basically weeding other areas of the homestead, like my food forest, which produces, my perennial fruits and vegetables. I'm taking those weeds and I'm mulching around the base of the cannabis plants. And now the rabbits are getting their food source from weeding another area and actually doing all the work of growing my cannabis. And so my cannabis is grown dry farmed. There's no, I don't water it. I don't fertilize it with anything but the rabbits. And I get these massive plants. No, I water it like once or twice when I first transplant them. And then I basically just, the soil is so good in there now after several years of doing this that I don't need to water anymore. There's enough water that comes from our climate that I don't hardly do anything. I just put the plants in the ground and observe them. And the rabbits do all the rest of the work. To the point actually where the rabbits, I threw a funny mistake. A branch broke off right around harvest time from a storm and got laid down on the ground in the rabbit colony. And the rabbits, they actually ate all of the fan leaves and sugar leaves off of this branch and left me with the buds. And they did about 80% of the trim work for me on that one thing. And so I was like, holy smokes, the rabbits won't, for whatever reason, the reason why they won't eat the buds is because the buds have all the resin on there, right? So the rabbits, the resinous flower of the cannabis is actually a protection mechanism for the seed. And so the rabbits don't want to deal with all that chewy, gummy stuff. They just want the easy, fluffy stuff on the outsides. And so the rabbits are doing about 80% of the trim work because when I actually go to harvest the cannabis, I just weave the branches in the fence. And now the rabbit that stays up off the ground, the rabbits reach up, they trim it down. This is food for them, turns into meat. And then I get my cannabis pre-trimmed.
So it's like, not only do you participate in a Bitcoin circular economy, but you also have a circular food source because everything from your property is feeding these rabbits. They're producing meat for you. They're also growing the weed. The weed is... all the leaves are feeding the rabbits too. It's just like, and you're not having to spend money on irrigation and water and all these different things. It's like your idea of a circular, like that's why you're interested in the circular Bitcoin economy, because that's kind of what you infuse into all areas of your life.
Yes. And this all boils down to this permaculture framework.
Is that what permaculture is?
This is what it looks like when you really start to get these permaculture systems interacting with each other. Typically, it's like the output of one system is the input for another, and the yield of the system also. So there's the primary yield of the cannabis system is actually the seed. I'm pollinating my cannabis and I grow the cannabis for seed, and then because the cannabis seed is much more loosely regulated. And so I sell this cannabis seed for Bitcoin on Noster, right? So I'm using a Bitcoin miner to grow the cannabis in this small greenhouse that I've got. I'm getting Bitcoin in the beginning process of that. Then through the life's journey of the cannabis plant, I also get the yield of the rabbit meat, the increased soil, And the cannabis that I can use for my own personal, you know, I use it personally. And then I get Bitcoin at the end of it through selling the seed. And then I still have the seed, leftover seed to start the next year's crop. And so there's kind of this little, this catchphrase or meme or whatever, circular ecologies mirror circular economies, right? And so if you can build, like I'm building the circular ecology at my homestead, so this gives me a good understanding of what it might be like to create a circular economy in my Bitcoin culture through all these meetups that I'm going to and everything else.
I love this. This is so fascinating. And I can't wait till more people hear about it, because this would inspire others to do similar things. And so the idea of the word homestead, I want you to break down what that actually means for people. Does that mean because you have this permaculture built into your land and have the yurt? And if you could also break down what a yurt is for people compared to the tiny house you built. And so explain what the homestead actually means and the yurt.
So I think there's the purity test around what is truly homesteading, right? But from my opinion, homesteading is basically taking the place that you live, the property that you wield, and using that to produce yields for you. And a lot of times that one of the primary ones is this yield of financial capital. How can I take the sun that's shining on my property and the property that I've got and turn that into some Bitcoin? And in addition to that, you can also build, like with the yurt and the tiny house, for example, this is my way of taking my intellectual and experiential capital, the way that I know how to be handy and build things, and build a thing that is now a piece of material capital that I can use on the space that I've got, and then turn that into, well, that's mostly fiat. That's like our main fiat cash flow. But I also have Bitcoiners come stay there too, and that turns into a little bit of Bitcoin. The yurt is essentially it's a Mongolian style dwelling. So the Mongolians build these round portable tents, essentially. They're quite large, and the yurt that I have is not Mongolian influenced. It's more like Home Depot influenced, you know, where you just, it's 2x4s and stuff that you get at the hardware store or whatever. It's still really beautiful and cool. But it's essentially a round tent on a deck that it's about 200, maybe it's, I don't know, it's 10 foot in diameter, or 20 foot in diameter, sorry.
Oh, wow.
20 foot yurt. So it's big, you know, it's just one room, a studio, right? There's a bed in there. There's a little kitchen in there. There's a couch in there, place for you to hang up your clothes. Then I've got an outhouse, a composting toilet on the outside, and a little deck you can hang out on. Mm-hmm. But it's a round tent that you come and stay in. And the vibe, like the ceiling is super high. It comes to this central point, this peak, and there's a clear dome at the top. So the sunlight can come in from the top and then around from the sides to the windows. It's got a lot of good energy. I know you've talked to somebody from the meetup culture that we're in that has stayed in the yurt. Offer these rentals, the tiny house and the yurt, up for half price as an incentive to get people to come to Michigan and experience the meetup culture that we have here. So on the night of the meetup, I run the South Bend, Indiana meetup, which is the first Thursday of the month. And then there's a close by me as well as the Southwest Michigan meetup, which is the third Thursday of every month. And so on those two Thursdays, I offer the yurt and the tiny house up for half price. If any Bitcoiners want to come stay, it's like half price is in a really good deal. And with that, you get to stay, you go to the meetup, and then you get the tour of the homestead. You can see all my Bitcoin mining contraptions and everything else.
Is the tiny house and the yurt right next to each other?
Yeah, essentially. I mean, they're pretty close by. With this permaculture design stuff, you consider the views and you consider the positioning of all these assets on your property. And so while they're fairly close to each other and they're off the main driveway, the access is easy, but the privacy is great because you can't necessarily, no matter where you're standing at the yurt or where you're standing at the tiny house or where I'm standing at my house, you cannot see the people. You can't really see them, but everybody gets to look at my pond, you know? And so the way that they're laid out, it still feels really private, like you're in your own area, but they're close to each other.
I'm just wondering only because I'm like, oh, I would like to come there with my husband for a meetup, but it'd be so cool to do it one day with the kids so that they could stay in one and we could stay in the other. So if they were close, but also me and my husband could split up and take one, you know, one of the kids just to see just if they, cause just to experience something like that, even for younger people would be really a great experience. I think it sounds amazing. And the only thing I'm wondering is there internet access? Because they would probably just be like, otherwise it'd just be a me and my husband thing because we can totally like to get away and unplug.
Well, yeah, it's actually, depending on how many kids you have, the yurt's great. You know, for 2-3 kids, you could easily mm-hmm. squeeze them in there. They'd have a blast in there. Mm-hmm. And then the tiny house has got, and also depending on the age of the kids, but the tiny house just has one queen bed up in a loft. And it's a little bit more cramped in, you know.
Yeah.
Anyways, it would work great for to do both of them. And so the internet situation that's actually been something we've been struggling with at the homestead forever. Mm-hmm. And so then basically we were fucking around with all of this, you know, the satellite internet that was garbage before Starlink. And then like the cell phone internet, which was garbage because we get no connectivity out here. It's like we might have AT&T service for a couple years and then the tower that was serving us blew up or something happened to it. And then we have to switch to T-Mobile and then that one gets fucked up. And, you know, mm-hmm. eventually Starlink came around and we got Starlink, but that's like incredibly expensive. And finally they just laid fiber down along the road. So now we've got fiber internet. We've got like amazing internet after 10 years. It just took 10 years of waiting and we got good internet. And so, yeah, there's internet at both of them as well.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, I mean, to think that, I mean, I got fiber at my house recently too, and it's been great. But just to think that, you know, this is coming around and now you have it, that's awesome to hear. So you don't have to struggle with that anymore and switch services constantly. And, you know, Starlink, yeah, it's great, but it's so expensive. So yeah, I love this idea of the yurt. And you have, you know, so it's the South Bend, the last Thursday of the month, and then the other one.
South Bend's the first Thursday.
First Thursday, okay.
First Thursday. That's a meetup that I organize with another guy, Bitcoin account, who's also mm-hmm. kind of attending a lot of these Michigan meetups. We're Michiana, you know, we're South Bend, we're technically in Indiana, but we're a part of the Michigan meetup culture, mm-hmm. essentially. And then the Southwest Michigan meetup, which is in Benton Harbor, is the third Thursday of the month. And that meetup is awesome, dude. That's everyone's favorite meetup.
Really?
Because this is the one where, for whatever reason, there's just all these people doing homestead, like doing so much cool stuff. The circular economy like really shines through. Mm-hmm. So the last one was last week. It was last Thursday. And I was able to buy, I got 4 dozen eggs, 2 pounds of ground beef, 2 quarts of yogurt, a loaf of sourdough bread, a month's supply of collagen powder, and 4 pounds of coffee. So I was able to like go to that meetup and like actually do a grocery trip, right? Like these are like staple items that I'm going to be eating through till the next month. And then I'm going to buy them over again.
Wow.
And so of course, you know, I brought my Bitcoin miner there.
Yeah, of course. But that's another reason why it's good to go to these things, because you feel like you can participate in that circular economy. You can find other people that are creating real natural products, foods, whatever. And, you know, you're able to, you know, I don't know, it makes you better. It makes you cleaner and healthier. And you're also paying a Bitcoiner in Bitcoin. It's just a great way to meet other people doing this stuff and actually be able to acquire these things. So it's like that bartering, you know, that community. It's actually culture. It's a Bitcoin culture, Bitcoin community, making these Bitcoin friends, finding out people doing the most amazing things. And yeah, what you've built and all the stuff that you're combining and the whole idea of permaculture is fascinating. And I'm so glad to hear that it's not just you that's out there doing this. There's a whole group of people doing things like this and going to these Michigan meetups. It's really inspiring. And I would love to, you know, soon go to one of these things. You know, my husband looks forward to it too. He loves going to all the Bitcoin things. And so it'd be a great time. You know, I'm super excited. And just to be able to like, it makes me happy to buy just natural foods lately, even if it wasn't for Bitcoin, when I find out something is, you know, farm fresh or, you know, not created with poisons in it. That's what I look for. And especially if it's either made with Bitcoin or, I can use Bitcoin to pay for it is I mean, the best feeling. So, yeah, I'm just so excited.
The beautiful thing about it too is the way that it ends up working out in the long run, because we've been doing this for years now, and the sats are moving from one person. Like, for example, when I come with my maple syrup, I'll sell the maple syrup to somebody, and then I will turn around, I'll get the sats from them, and I will turn around and send those sats directly to somebody else for the yogurt. And every month we're doing this, we're circulating our Bitcoin. Now, people who would be critical, like a lot of times people would be critical of, oh, don't spend your Bitcoin, you want to save that. But the way it works out is that every month we're spending this kind of roughly the same dollar value on these items back and forth between each other. But generally the price is going up. And so every year we're all left with more Bitcoin in our cold storage, right? And we're getting the same amount of goods and services. So what this means is as the Bitcoin circulates, the purchasing power is spiraling up, and this leaves us with more purchasing power for new people to come in and participate in the economy. And you could imagine at scale, if now this starts to happen at that fork in coin, the Chicago Bitcoin Collective place, if the Michigan people start coming with their goods and services there, people from outside the city start coming in to this hub, and the sats start circulating there, and then it starts happening in Nashville at Bitcoin Park, and the Indianapolis meetup in between, and everywhere else. The Bitcoin economy, this is how hyper-Bitcoinization happens, is that
right.
People are trading in sats circularly over and over again. But as time goes on, they have more purchasing power. So there's more room for more people to come join the party.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because even if you think about, even if we're not waiting for new people to come in all the time, but instead all the Bitcoiners that are already convicted and using Bitcoin, if they start going to these meetups and seeing things that they need in real life that somebody else is providing, that is a Bitcoiner and they can participate in the circular economy. It's like, imagine the people only that are in Bitcoin start doing this more and more and more. That's like a tipping point right there, just for whoever's already in the system, you know? So, and then as more people come into the system, that's why I think people think about the idea of, you know, Bitcoin's scarce, right? So what happens if nobody else has it, just a small group of people? But that's why it's a redistribution of wealth, because eventually everybody, you know, that the sats keep just circulating between everybody that joins, and it just keeps spreading out through everybody. It's so divisible. So yeah, it's a redistribution. I love it.
Yeah, the best way to get the Bitcoin, in my opinion, especially if you don't like the KYC shit, right? If you're not comfortable putting your information out there, having your identity attached to the Bitcoin, earning it is the best way to do it. And the best place to earn the Bitcoin is, one, at Bitcoin meetups, and two, on Nostr, right? You want to go essentially where the Bitcoiners are that have Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And that's how you earn Bitcoin.
Right.
And I lost my train of thought here. But
while you think of that, I'm even thinking of the whole, my services that I offer, doing like being a hairdresser and cutting hair. So I think even I was talking with some of them yesterday, and they were saying that there could be an area where it's like an event, like a Bitcoin haircut, like everyone comes in and I'm like cutting hair in the back or something. And it's like, you could pay in sats, and, you know, people that need a haircut anyway, or need like a beard trim or whatever it is, you know, and my salon is right down the street anyway, but it would be so cool to have an event there just for people who are like, hey, I'm here anyway, why not get a haircut and pay in sats? You know, it's just, you could do so much. Like, and I would never think in my life that this would be a thing that might happen, but it probably will happen. And I think it's so amazing that when you're around people, like-minded people, they think of ways to be able to include you in that, you know, not to just be like, oh yeah, she does hair, go to her place, and, you know, but they're actually thinking of ways to incorporate everything. It's just really cool.
Well, so that reminds me of where I lost my train of thought. So this example is great because, all right, you're right down the street from the Chicago Bitcoin Collective. People, you could open up some slots or reserve some slots right before the BitDevs that happens on that day. Someone could come in, get their haircut, pay in Bitcoin, and maybe it's me. And maybe I'm bringing maple syrup to sell at the BitDevs, right? Mm-hmm. And then you can say, well, maybe I'll buy some of that maple syrup while you get your haircut, and now I can have it here at the salon as just like for the Bitcoiners that come in here, another thing that they can buy and give them market access to this item.
Right.
And what's happening actually. And so this Southwest Michigan meetup that I talk about where there's all this food changing hands, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of the food and a lot of the stuff is produced directly by the Bitcoiners, but a lot of it is also just Bitcoiners finding market access. Like everybody wants high quality beef, but they don't know a high quality beef producing rancher within an hour's driving distance of them. So it's very inconvenient. But one of the guys knows a high quality beef producing rancher, and he actually spends fiat on the beef, right? And then he brings the beef, he takes the orders for the beef and sells it for Bitcoin at the meetup.
Great.
So now instead of having to buy his Bitcoin on the exchange and KYC and all this shit, right? He actually could just take his fiat, turn it into beef, and then take the beef and turn it into Bitcoin by giving market access.
See, and
so this is another way you stack Bitcoin KYC free.
That's so cool. That's such a great idea. You know, turn the fiat into beef, turn the beef into Bitcoin. And I've been wanting to buy, me and my husband have been wanting to buy a half cow for a while now. And we're looking into which, you know, farm we're going to get it from because we want it like grass fed, grass finished. And we want to, you know, do this whole thing, but we need a big freezer. But how cool would it be if you could just pick up a bunch of it, you know, at a meetup that somebody's already doing this and then they already are getting it from a farm that's clean and, you know, grass fed, grass finished type thing. I would do that. I mean, it'd be nice not to have to stock up like a year's worth of beef, you know, and I could just do it in smaller portions.
Right. It's a little more convenient. You don't have like the beef liver buried at the bottom of your freezer. Mm. And you're like, well, I paid for this and eventually I got to eat it or what, you know, you can just go buy the beef that you want and you don't have to deal with all the other cuts that you don't. And you pay a little bit more, but it's, once again, you would be doing that if you're buying it from the grocery store or anywhere else anyways.
Yeah.
But now you're participating in the Bitcoin economy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, and I'm, because either way, you're right. If I haven't gone out and made the decision yet to do the half a cow thing, I'm still going to my local butcher and getting better cuts than I would at the, you know, a big box grocery store, whatever it is. And I'm still paying a premium for that, you know, so I'd rather spend sats on it anyway. You know, if I'm not going to commit to the half a cow yet or something, but even if you do want to, there's people around when you go to these meetups that will tell you where to go if you wanted to do this finally and have the right, you know, place and give you a suggestion instead of you just going into it blind and by yourself. So it's just getting advice from like-minded people, friends that are into the same stuff you are is so valuable.
Yeah, it really becomes a culture, right?
Mm-hmm.
When we have these meetups, the discussions end up often veering away from, you know, Bitcoin specifically into, you know, prepping, gardening, homesteading, homeschooling, parenting, all of these kinds of things where we overlap on a lot of the thought processes there. Mm-hmm. And we share the good nuggets of information. And especially when it comes, and even with the Bitcoin specific stuff, right? Like what Lightning wallet do you recommend people use and all this kind of stuff locally? There are Lightning wallets and all these different kinds of ways of interacting and utilizing Bitcoin that rise to the top because they fulfill the need that that particular community is looking to utilize. And so the meetups are like, I think, one of the most potent ways to participate in Bitcoin. If you want to maximize, if you got no fiat left, right? I wish I had a way to get more Bitcoin. I have no fiat. Well, the best way to then expand the utility of your Bitcoin, if you can't get any more any other way, is to start going to the meetups and start meeting the people and making the connections and start working the deals and sharing the knowledge.
Wow, I love this. And so pretty much I find the best place to find the meetups, like where I started finding meetups was on the link is below. You know, you guys can join with a discount and you could meet Bitcoin friends and find meetups locally. But where do you also suggest for people to find local meetups, like local Bitcoin meetups?
Well, this is a great opportunity for me to plug my podcast.
Nice.
I recently started a podcast with a friend of mine, Reed, and Reed runs the Western Massachusetts Bitcoin meetup. And we've got a podcast called Local Bitcoiners. And so our podcast is basically, the whole goal is to showcase different meetups from around the country and world. Let people know that there are, if you don't think that there's a Bitcoin community and meetup around you, there probably is. You just haven't been able to sniff it out yet. And we're trying to expose these, right? And so you can check out my podcast, Local Bitcoiners. You'll learn, like, if you haven't ever been to a meetup, you'll learn a lot about what all the different flavors of meetups you can experience. In addition, if you want to start a meetup, you'll get a lot of great tips and best practices for starting a meetup. And in addition to that, it's basically like this really, this is kind of a problem, right? Because there's the Club Orange, there's meetup.com, there's Luma, there's Noster-based stuff. There's all these different Signal chats and Telegram groups that you might be able to come across that will have meetups. But, you know, if you're on Noster or if you're on Twitter or whatever, and you don't know if there's a meetup and you can't find one, maybe just put that question out there. Hey, does anyone know if there's a meetup in, like, you don't have to dox your location, right? Exact location, but the nearest major city to you. And granted, like, you're going to get, if you got a meetup like 15 minutes down the road from you, you're very lucky, right?
Right.
It's hard to find one right in your backyard. But like I said, I'm willing to drive an hour to 2.5 hours to a meetup. Because I understand, like, from doing this for several years now, there's an immense amount of value that you get from experiencing all these different meetup cultures within that range of your place. And the connections that you make are invaluable.
Right. Where is your podcast? What platform is it on? Is it on multiple platforms?
So we have an RSS feed, so you can find it on any podcasting 2.0 app, Local Bitcoiners. But we are using Fountain as our main, like, that's what we post our links through and everything, is the Fountain podcasting app.
Amazing. Yes, that is linked for you guys as well in the pinned comment in the description. So check that podcast out. Pose the question if you don't know where. Download some of these apps, especially Club Orange, I think is amazing. And, you know, it just shows you all the events locally that are going on. And, you know, even if it's not right by you, it's worth it to try it. We highly recommend it. And yeah, it's just such an amazing thing to be part of. You know, you feel like you're actually part of this culture, part of Bitcoin, part of using it as money. You know, if you agree Bitcoin is money, you should find ways to use it as money. And especially when you can get clean, pure, fresh food, you know, type things, you know, anything that's not manipulated. Like, we like truth, and we like, you know, money that's true and things that are true. So it's just nice to be able to find these products and services from people participating in the circular economy. And it's amazing to see. And you're right, you're highlighting on your podcast places locally, anywhere else you find out about, for people to realize that this stuff is going on, this stuff is, and why it benefits them to check it out. And look, you are here on my show doing this, you are meeting people in person, and you are not showing your face here. Great. You know, but you do meet up in person. You know, it's like one of those things where I think people just have this weird fear in Bitcoin about not wanting to, you know, meet up somebody in person. I don't know. I just think it's such an amazing thing. I'm so glad I started doing it, and I'm so glad I met you, and I can't wait to come check out your homestead and hang out and do all the things, and, you know, check out your rabbits. I love everything about this. Such an amazing story. So thank you so much for joining me today, and I am definitely looking forward to listening to your podcast more often, because I'm super interested in all this local Bitcoin stuff. And I'm looking forward to seeing you at our meetup. It's every month. It's the, what is it? Bitcoin Beers is the one we go to.
Bitcoin and Beers, and last Wednesday.
Last Wednesday. Month. Oh,
Bottle
and
Theory.
Yes, Bottle Theory. Last Wednesday of every month. And that's also found on Club Orange. But also,
I don't
one
know
thing.
If you, do, are you, you don't want to say the city?
Yeah, it's an, I mean, if I'm going to it, I don't mind saying the city. It's like, it's in Elmhurst. So Elmhurst.
Western suburbs of Chicago. Yeah, Elmhurst. Yeah.
Yes. That's the location for this, for that meetup. So the other thing I wanted to say is that even my husband, being a singer, we were talking yesterday, I think I don't know if I was talking about it with you at the meetup we were at yesterday, but he has performances, and he's a, you know, sings live music. He does covers. And it's so hard sometimes to get people to come out locally that we know, because everyone's so busy or everyone's got something to do. But when it comes to Bitcoiners, it's so nice to see that Bitcoiners come from all over the place just to hang out with other Bitcoiners. So we've decided that every one of his public shows that he's having, we're going to just turn that into a Bitcoin meetup. Why not? So people can come out, hang out, listen to live music, and I'll be posting those as well. So just I just want to be able to hang out with more Bitcoin people while I'm out and offer that as an option for entertainment and just to have a good time together. So I will be doing those as well.
Yeah. And when you show up to listen to the music, you might as well bring a trinket or something to try and earn some sats, you know, and see what's, who knows, it could turn into like, you know, all of a sudden there's like a little farmer's market that pops up in the corner of the venue where he's singing at, just organically. I am not shy. This is the other thing is you do not have to ask permission to like show up to the meetup to sell stuff.
Right.
I go to the Bit Devs. I go to the bar. I go to every single meetup. I just bring my magic bag with all my goodies in there and talk to people and see if they want to buy stuff. We come from a culture, I think, where it's like, if you're self-promoting, it seems like you're pushing, you're soliciting. But actually, the only way to let people, this is how you let people know that they can buy your stuff with Bitcoin. You have to tell them about it. So don't be shy. Show up with your stuff. See what happens. If this is good feedback, right? If you sell nothing and nobody's interested, well, maybe that's not the market for your thing. And you will find out what thing you can show up with. And once again, it doesn't have to be something you're making yourself. It could be cool things like you could build seed signers and sell seed signers. You could build Bitcoin, like start 9 Bitcoin nodes. I don't know if you ended up getting a node from Relatively Irrelevant or not, the start 9 nodes that he's building.
I ended up getting, I just ended up going with the start 9.
Yeah, so there's people out there building Bitcoin hardware, Bitcoin miners, and when you meet in person, you're like a way less likely to get scammed than if you're trying to do this deal over Twitter or Telegram or whatever else.
And well, go ahead.
Well, yeah, just it's you don't have to be, because I think a lot of people get discouraged when they see that, oh, I'm producing lamb and I'm producing all these food items because I have this homestead that I have access to. If you have an oven, you can bake sourdough bread, right? And you can show up with 2 loaves of sourdough bread at the meetup. And I guarantee you, if you bring 2 loaves of sourdough bread to the meetup and you try and sell them for 10 or 15 bucks, you will sell them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that'll just take you the afternoon to produce that thing. And you're getting the wheels turning on this circular economy. So
yeah, that's so cool. Yeah, so even one of our friends, when we had our first meetup ever, and it was one of the ones where my husband was performing at one of those events, but he had flown in from out of town and he brought his book, like however many copies of his book. And he had rented a car. So he had his car pulled up front of the place and he was selling books out of his trunk and, you know, selling them for sats. And I was like, this is the coolest thing ever. I was so excited because he was shy a little bit too. And we're like, just go pull up your car, bring your book. So then he just popped his trunk open and people were like, I want to see. And then he was actually like sold however many copies to whoever was interested. And I'm like, that is amazing. It made me so happy. So yeah, whatever you're making, it could be a book you've written, you know, just bring some copies. I think it's awesome.
Even if you sell enough stuff to pay, sometimes this happens, right? I drive 2 hours to a meetup. I sell enough stuff to cover my gas.
Mm-hmm.
But this now people know who I am and they might reach out to me through Signal or through Telegram or through Noster and then want to buy stuff from me that way. And you're just making the connections and letting people know you exist and you've got this stuff that's available for Bitcoin. And if you want to spend your Bitcoin, now you've got people to do it with.
Right. That's awesome. Thank you so much. It's an inspiration. Thank you for joining me here and telling your story. I can't wait to see you. I'm so excited that you've been going around making these connections because now you join me on my show and maybe more people will find out about this stuff and come to our meetups or have their own. So it's amazing.
Well, thanks. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
Thank you. It's been great. And looking forward to seeing you again and looking forward to checking out your podcast. Make sure you guys check it out too, The Local Bitcoiners, it's called. And check it out on Fountain or wherever else you could find your podcast. So thank you everyone for joining us today. Have a great day.